Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone on today's ALAC monthly meeting on Tuesday, the 31st of March at 1900 UTC. We have Alan Greenberg, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Holly Raich, Glenn McKnight, Maureen Hilliard, Baron Gillen, Jimmy Schultz, Eduardo Diaz, Sandra Hoferichter, Cyranoš Vardanyan, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Mikhail Medrish, Sebastian Bachelet, Judith Hellestein. On the Spanish channel, we have Fatima Cambronero. On the French channel, we have Haja Ouattara. We also have Julie Hammer with us today. Apologies noted from Vanda Scartazzini, Tijani Benjema, Rafid Fatani, and Leon Sanchez. From staff, we have Heidi Ulrich, Silvia Vivanco, Ariel Young, Natalie Peregrine, and Isla Gruber. Today we have French, Spanish, and Russian interpretation. Our French interpreters are Isabelle and Claire. On the Spanish channel, we have Veronica and David. And on the Russian channel, we have Ekaterina. If I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking, not only for transcript purposes, but also to allow the interpreters to identify you on the other language channel and to speak at a reasonable speed to allow for accurate interpretation. Thank you very much, and over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much, Gisela. It's Alan Greenberg speaking for the interpreters and for the transcript record. And I hope people will soon recognize my voice so I don't have to do this every time I interject. Are there any items that anyone would like to add to the agenda, either or to change the agenda or add under any other business? Hearing no voices, seeing no hands, I will presume the agenda is accepted as shown, and we will proceed.
Alan, this is Heidi.
Yes, Heidi.
Yes, I see.
Now we suddenly have hands after
Sebastian,
Heidi.
Yes, Sebastian and Olivier have raised their hands, but you've seen that now.
They have. They hadn't when I was speaking. You'll excuse me, I still have a cough, and occasionally I'll go into coughing fits. Sebastian. Sebastian, are you there?
Is it better?
Now we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, very much. Just to be sure that in the course of this meeting we will discuss about the organization of the next face-to-face meeting for the CCWG at one point. If not, if we can have that in the any other business, would be great. Thank you very much.
There will be a discussion of the CCWG, and if I'm not quite sure what you're referring to, but you're free to bring it up when we finish that section. Olivier.
Thank you, Alan. Okay.
Thanks, Alan. Olivier Capanoblon speaking. I'm just putting my hand up because I asked for the agenda to be scroll unlocked, and then it was scroll unlocked, then locked again, then unlocked, then locked again. So you really have to make sure this is unlocked, because at the moment it is locked, the scrolling. Okay, now it's unlocked, so please, nobody else touch it. Thanks very much.
And if I could ask someone to not make me a presenter, make me just a normal person, so then when I touch the various things, they don't move around on other people's screens. I don't think I need presenter status for anything. Thank you. A couple of remarks. First of all, in Singapore, we made a lot of plans to revamp committees and start some work on a number of activities, and that hasn't happened. I'm afraid the CCWG, CWG activities have just taken over for the last couple of weeks. The good news is that, although, as Cheryl points out, we're not past the heavy work yet. As you'll see when we get onto this section on this, on the two working groups, we have passed a critical point in both of them, I hope, or I believe, and that should free up a fair amount of my time to go back to being chair. So I will give you my word of honor to try to revive the things that have sort of died an unnatural death over the last few weeks. The other comment is, for the first time in my memory, on a number of votes recently, not all of them, but on a number of votes, we have had 15 out of 15 ALAC members voting. That's where we should always be, but I'm really delighted to see it happening now, and I hope it will continue. I have no real other comments. We have a moderately long agenda. The time allocated to some of the items, we may go well under, and or we may go well over. So I'm not 100% sure exactly how long the meeting will be. I, of course, will do my best to make sure it doesn't go over 2 hours. And with that, the next item is review of any outstanding action items that are of particular interest to the ALAC. I don't think there are many, but I'll turn it over to Heidi to bring up anything that is still on the list.
Thank you, Alan. This is Heidi, for the record. We did a review of the ALAC meeting from January, as well as the Singapore ALAC-related action items, and the only one that we found that was still requiring ALAC action was actually over to you, Alan, and that was I am to work with you on the issue of the ALS criteria and expectations with the aim to form a small working group consisting of at least two persons from each RALO.
Thanks. And as I pointed out, those have been in abeyance. They will be revived, hopefully not too late next week, or not too late this week, I hope, rather. And so I hope we'll go through with that, plus the other several committees that we're revamping. So, again, my apologies on that. But if that's the only action item that we have an issue with, then I guess we're not doing too bad. Okay, the next item is the policy development page. There's a lot of issues listed on the agenda. Most of them are either things that we have approved recently, and you know, I guess if we look at the statements approved by the ALAC, we'll see an example of a 15-vote one, which was delightful to see. And I'm not considering whether people are voting for or against anything, but the people are actually voting. On the other hand, it's followed by one with only 10 people voting, which is just barely quorum. So let's hope we can maintain the first number and not more of the second. There are currently three items on the agenda that we need to discuss and decide whether we're doing anything on. There are a number of statements that are currently are in the process of drafting. And I need to look at this carefully because when I did the agenda very late last night, there were only two items. So we have a new one. The first one is the fiscal year 16 operating budget and operating plan and budget. I have asked Tijani as the lead person to make a recommendation on whether we need to say anything or not. However, I would like to think that everyone on the ALAC at least takes a cursory view through the operating plan and budget. This is the document that describes what ICANN is supposed to be doing. And although a lot of the ALAC work is driven by immediate events, statements coming up for comment or other things, everyone should be aware of where ICANN is heading. And I really would appreciate if everyone take at least a brief view, if not a careful view, of the plan and budget. The comment closes on the May 1st, but there is a wiki space on it now. And please take a look at the budget, take a look at the operating plan. If you have any comments, plus or minus, make them. Make sure you're getting involved in all of ICANN, not just the ALAC. So that's technically in Tijani's hands, but I would appreciate it if everyone take a look at it. Protecting the rights, the draft report on rights protection mechanisms is being looked at by Leon. again, if anyone has a particular interest in that one, then please take a look at the documents and don't feel afraid to make any comments. And lastly, we have the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group. And I don't believe we have assigned that to anyone. It's not clear we need to make a statement. I know Carlton, I believe, said we probably don't. But we should be looking at this from an internationalized perspective and trying to make sure that there's nothing that is bothering people. Again, we should be out of the mode of making a comment just to be seen. But if we have something substantive to say, then we really do need to say it. Any comments on either these three statements or any of the other ones that that are currently open or just recently closed? Yes, Ariel.
Thank you, Alan. This is Ariel for the record. There's one public comment request just came out yesterday, and I will paste it in the chat. It's about the proposed implementation of GNSO PDP recommendations on inter-registrar transfer policy, IRTP Part C. And that one we haven't decided whether to draft a statement and who to approach regarding this public comment request.
Okay. Could you, when you open up the wiki page, could you put a comment in telling us what our past record is on this? That report was open for comment as a final report. It is open for comment before the board approved it, and now we're looking at the implementation. So if you could point us to our history, that would be quite useful in knowing what did we say anything on the previous times it was open for comment, and if so, can you point us to where the statements are?
Okay.
That will stop everyone from having to do that same work in parallel. Any other comments or thoughts on the policy development activities? A crucial part of what we're doing, but right now hasn't been a particularly heavy load. Okay, we'll go on to the next issue, which is the review of ALS applications. We have a number of ALSs that have recently been approved, specifically ISOC Delhi and ISOC Palestine, and I welcome them. I don't think we have anyone on this call from those groups, but you should try really to get people who are new to at large to participate in some of these calls. We have none currently out for voting. We have a number that are in various states of new due diligence and a few waiting waiting for RALOs to give us advice. Is there anyone from any of the RALOs who wants to raise an issue on any of these? And in particular, there's one from AFRALO, which is currently suspended, a status which actually I don't think we have, but we'll ignore that for the moment. And if there's anyone who can comment on it, I'd appreciate it. Olivia, you have your hand up.
Yes, thanks, Alan. It's Olivia Klepanoblos speaking. I was a little slow in putting my hand up for the policy development. I had a question on that, if that's still okay with you.
Of course.
Right, thanks. I note that there are quite a few requests for commenting regarding the release of country and territory names under various TLDs. Last year, there were several instances of requests for the introduction of two-character domain names under several TLDs, and we developed a standard ALAC response that was drafted by David Antilasing and that could be filed in response to each one of these. That was in broad agreement, broad support. Now, has it been considered, perhaps, to have a standard response? I do note that in the recent past, in February, for example, there was no statement for the release of country and territory names within .dvag, .dui, .spiegel, etc., etc. So has it effectively the stance that there will be no statement on any of these, including the current ones.
Yes, I think that has been what we de facto decided. There are two different cases. One is the release of two character names, and the other is the release of actual territory names within closed domains, certain closed domains, either brand domains or geographic ones. And the general feeling from the ALAC and from at large has been, we see no problem with that. They have been released in other TLDs for ages, and we don't see any real problem. We know some GAC members, some countries have a problem with it, but we have not seen any problem with it. And in fact, when we did make statements, we advocated even wider release of names than is currently approved. And I think we pretty well decided that since all we're doing is saying yes, and the record in general has been, other than comments implicitly from the GAC on a negative side, nobody is voting against these. Excuse me. All of the requests for release of these names have effectively been approved, as far as I know, that there's no real merit in us going through the process of churning out statements for each one by one. And unless that situation changes, I think we'll continue that we'll just tacitly approve these, but without any explicit work on voting for on issuing statements or voting for them. If anyone has a problem with that, then certainly it should be raised, because we could reconsider. Heidi.
Hi, Olivier. Helen, this is Heidi. My point was actually for the ALSs to talk about the Gambia.
Okay.
I
was going to come in on that, but you can go ahead, Heidi.
If anyone has anything more to say on policy development, Cheryl, are you policy development or ALSs?
I was being polite to Heidi. I was policy development.
Go ahead, please, Cheryl. I'll come back when we get to that topic.
Okay. It was in response, Cheryl Langdon Orr for the Transcript Record, and it was in response to the discussion that Olivier had taken us through then on the country code release names in two characters. I'm absolutely supportive, may I make that statement to begin with, of the way the ALAC is managing this and what Alan has just outlined as a mechanism of what to say and when, and indeed more support what not to bother saying and when. What is important, however, is that we capture that overview current opinion that Alan and Olivia have just discussed and elucidated, and remind the current ALAC of that. My reasoning for wanting that to be highlighted formally is that during this coming calendar year, for the remaining of this calendar year, we are likely to see work coming out for public comment from the PDP process, which is the cross-community working group that is looking at the use of country and territory names. And that is going to be a somewhat different exercise, but it would be very helpful if, when we do, and we do need to comment on those more substantive pieces of work, we are well and truly remembering what the current flavour of opinion is. Of course, I've been presenting the current flavour of opinion as the current opinion whenever I've put forward an ALAC view, because I act as a liaison to that working group. So just to remind people that this is not a topic that can be ignored. It does need to be well managed, and I think ALAC is managing it. But we will have to have some somewhat more substantive discussions a little later on. So it's just a heads up, and please capture what you guys are saying formally. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Can I suggest that we ask staff to do an action item for, let us say, the two of us to create a motion for ALAC to approve, not in response to a statement, but just a motion to have so it goes into our records of our current policy with respect to release of country names and country codes. I presume you're
country
agreeable
territory.
With me on that?
Country and territory is the terminology.
Country and, and territory names and codes. And staff, can I ask you to put a deadline of a month from now on that? We'll try to get it done before, but as Cheryl has pointed out, times are busy right now. So just a motion documenting the at-large and ALAC position on release of such names. Anything else on policy development? Yes.
Yes, this is Viran. I just wanted to... Did Heidi explain about the IFL Gambia chapter?
Oh,
No, we're going back to that at the moment. We're trying to close out number five first, which people keep on wanting to reopen.
So if I just wanted to point out Evan's comment in the chat, if you might, I don't know if you want to raise that.
Regarding policy development, I need to indicate my immediate resignation as chair of the new GTLD working group and co-chair of Future Challenges working group. Thank you, Evan. Noted. And we will be soliciting. I'll talk to you and ask you for some thoughts on it, and then we'll be soliciting replacements. So noted, and staff, could you put an action item on that for me? And now, on to ALS applications. Heidi.
Just very briefly, this is Heidi for the record. Staff have informed me that they have contacted the ISOC headquarters to find out the status of the suspended ALS application from Gambia, what their status is currently. So that's where we are from the staff side. I'm not sure if Baron has an update on that.
Yes, this is Baran. Yes, I do actually. There isn't actually a president or vice president or any form of head in place right now. So they've called an AGM. They called one last week. So that should be held sometime in April. And when that is done, they would then select a president and a vice president and a secretary and so on. And hopefully when that is in place, they'll be able to reapply and for the certification.
Thank you very much. I'll point out that we've tended to use this term suspended on the request of RALO leadership on a number of times. That's not actually in our process. So I think we need to make sure we're following the official rules. There are other ways of doing what was required in that case. And I guess RALO leadership, before taking that kind of decision, should be talking to me and or Natalie, who I think is aware of our various options, perhaps painfully aware now, but you do a number of things, and make sure that we are following process. We're in the process of changing the process, but until it's changed, we really need to be careful to follow it. And Heidi, your hand is still up. Is that a new hand or an old hand?
That's an old hand, so I'll put it
down. So I think other than ISOC Gambia, everything is within process. I don't think it needs any other comment, at least none that I need to make. Is there anyone else who wants to make any comment on the ALS application on number six on the agenda? And Heidi, your hand is up. Perhaps still up. Okay, we'll pretend Heidi's hand is not up. And Olivier, Olivier is pointing out that someone has locked the agenda again, and he is very upset. And it's unlocked, magically. Item number seven, reports from the liaisons, RALOs, and working groups. Before I ask for if there's anyone who has any particular comments, I guess I will highlight the fact, and Olivier may have some comments on this also, that a number of these reports don't show up. These reports are really important, and just to belabor the point, when the reports show up, some of them are very minimalistic and don't say anything or hardly anything, and others are very complete. Just to embarrass Cyrenush again, I'll point out that the AP Rallo reports are an interesting one to look at, that they are in exhausting detail. Olivier, you have your hand up. Would you like to go further into what I just said?
Yes, thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivier Krapanovno speaking, and you're very kind. By the way, you're saying this. You're being very gentle, and I'm not going to be that gentle.
I wasn't finished yet.
Well, the AP Rallo reports are fantastic. Recommendation number, I think it's 29, one of the Atlas II recommendations from our ALSs is that there needs to be a page with all of the links to what's going on, not only in the ALAC, but also what is going on in the RALOs. And we have that page. The very fact that our ALSs are asking for this, and it's been more than 6 months. In fact, it's soon going to be a year beyond that. And the RALOs don't appear to be taking this seriously is a real concern to me. As you said, AP Rallo has got a fantastic page updates on their reports, and the ALAC reports are the screen is locked again. Scroll locking is locked again, right? So the AP Rallo monthly reports are fantastic. But some of the others haven't had a report in 2015. Some have had just a cut and paste of the agenda, and that effectively means that the secretary of that Rallo has spent a maximum of 2 minutes in order to do cut and paste. And I'm sorry, that's just not good enough. It's crazy. Do you expect anyone to actually become involved in your RALO if you just have 4 lines explaining what happened this month? So I really hope that something will be done about this, and I'm not sure how. I don't know whether the ALAC can impose anything on the RALOs or if the RALO chairs can wake up to the fact that they're not doing their job correctly and something needs to be done, because otherwise we're basically just trying to extract blood out of a stone, and that's not going to be helpful or easy at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. I'll be a bit pointed also. Either we have an issue that the RALO leadership is not bothering to report on what's going on, or nothing's going on. Either of those situations are far from optimal, and we are pushing very hard to get commitments from ICANN to support what we're doing. And support is not just travel support to meetings, but we're looking for support in a lot of different areas for continued engagement from the global stakeholder team. And if we can't demonstrate what's going on or what we're trying to do, then we're in a very bad position. I'll be blunt. Our existence is going to be questioned if we cannot demonstrate what it is we're doing. And these reports are a strong part of how we can demonstrate that. So I'm not going to belabor the point a lot. I'm not sure if, Olivia, if that's a new hand or an old hand. And I'm not going to call people to task, for why you haven't done anything in this meeting format. But it's something that we're going to have to fix, or we have a real problem. So I'll leave that hanging at this point. And if anyone wants to contact me personally or Olivier, who has a lot of experience in this, please do. But we really need to get our act together. Olivier, that is a new hand now.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. It's Olivier speaking. I was just going to add, we have a metrics working group that has worked on metrics, and this is exactly the reason why metrics are needed. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you were listening in at the start of the call, you will have noted that the metrics working group has had some trouble actually finding the time to do their work, but we are somewhat committed to getting things better. I'll also point out that part of the ALS expectations and criteria process we're going to go through includes RALO expectations. because they are closely linked together. So we'll be attacking it from several different points of view. But the bottom line is, I think it comes down to individuals committed to doing something, and rules only go so far. So please focus on this. It's really important. Next item. Oh, sorry, I didn't ask. Do any of the RALO chairs or liaisons or anyone else, work group chairs, have any specific comments they would like to make to highlight anything in their reports? Maureen, go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. This is Maureen for the record. I'd just like to highlight that I'll be contacting Ron Sherwood. We're actually sort of like starting to look at discussion topics for our joint meeting. I did mention that in my report. It's something that we should all be thinking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. Anyone else? Julie has said that she doesn't have any comments, and I have misspelled her name in the chat. And Fatima.
This is Fatima speaking. For the record, I am not a chair or secretary of the RALO, but I would like to make a brief comment on this issue that we are discussing based on the commitments of the different individuals that are part of each of the RALOs. Perhaps in our RALO, it would be necessary to remind us that part of the commitments assumed by the chair and secretary is to facilitate these ALEC meetings and also to participate in the at-large groups. Perhaps we need to remind this, I don't know if as an obligation, perhaps as a commitment, this needs to be clear for the officers in each of the RALO, because this is not happening in my RALO. This is not very clear. I mean, this commitment that we need to assume is not really very clear. Thank you.
That's a good point, Fatima. Thank you. And staff, can we have an AI for me to send out a note to RALO leadership pointing out that we do appreciate if they can participate in these meetings? Olivier, you have your hand up, and I'm presuming it's the hand up of our new GNSO liaison this time.
Thank you very much, Alan. Olivier Capanablon speaking, and it feels very weird to be sitting where I'm sitting when I'm used to ask you about what's happening in the GNSO. Just weird. Anyway, right, well, several things. We had the council conference call that took place last week, I believe. I went to 2 weeks ago. And several things came on the agenda. First, the motion regarding the GAC GNSO consultation group. This is the one that was formed to develop proposals to facilitate the GAC's ability to engage more productively and effectively with the GNSO. The motion was to implement the recommendations of the GAC GNSO consultation group in relation to issue scoping on a trial basis. There were concerns about what trial meant, whether how long that would last for, but the motion was carried, and so the GNSO will proceed forward now with implementing the recommendations of the GAC GNSO consultation group. The other matter of worth noticing is there were two updates regarding CWG IANA and CCWG, so the cross-community working groups and accountability. The concerns there were similar to the concerns in at large, especially with regards to the time and timeline and time being taken and the time taken for the legal advice to reach those groups. Of course, that GNSO council meeting took place before the face-to-face meetings in Istanbul, so it might well be that things have moved since that time. Another item to notice specifically, the GNSO review that's proceeding forward. There were a lot of questions being asked from various parties, and so the independent examiner commissioned the board to conduct the GNSO review, and therefore the process is moving forward, but with a small delay to collect more input from various parties. What they're doing is to have interviews with both staff, but also community members, and I think that some people in our community might have been asked questions. Alan, perhaps you were interviewed. I can't quite remember by heart the whole list, but there was a long list of people that were. And so comments are still welcome today and should be sent directly to the person in charge of this process, Jennifer Wolf, or through a constituency or stakeholder group representative on the GNSO review working party. The link is, all of the links and so on are, of course, in my report. And then finally, another matter that's of particular interest, perhaps, to the ALAC is with regards to the recommendations on GTLV auction process. There's been a lot of question, as you know. There have been many auctions that have now been conducted with a significant sum being collected and currently not being allocated to any budget whatsoever. And it has been felt now in the GNSO that in front of the lots of questions that were asked, there should be a call for participants to form a drafting team to develop a charter for a working group to develop recommendations on new GTLV auction proceeds. That's a GNSO working group. The question, though, and in fact, I think it's been put forward, actually, is that it should be a cross-community working group, a CWG on auction proceeds. And I'm not sure whether Alan Greenberg has been contacted already, but we should be expected to be contacted very soon and be asked to have someone sent to develop the charter, and then, of course, to have people to go on that cross-community working group. It was understood that, of course, with the current number of cross-community working groups, both IANA and the accountability thread, the community is already really very much at exhausting point. But it was at the same time felt that it was important to get that process started, perhaps not as a huge priority, but certainly get things prepared so that by the time we are through with the stewardship and with the accountability threads, then this group would be in full order and we'd be moving forward. That's all the main points. I've got a few more points that I've made in my report, and of course that report is available on the link provided. And that's it. If you have any questions, I'm happy to ask.
Thank you, Olivier. I do want to go on with the agenda because we're trying not to make these major sessions, but I have one comment, and I see Sebastian's hand is up, so I'll go to Sebastian first. Sebastian?
Yes. Sorry. Yeah, I have one question, Olivia. Why is it just a working group on auction and not on all the money left by the this round of the GTLD?
Yeah, thanks for this, Sebastian. I don't know. It's Olivia speaking. I don't know. Very good point, and I could raise it if you wish to. I think that's probably quite a question to ask. I think that the overall thing, though, is that as far as auction proceeds are concerned, the magnitude of the proceeds is a way larger than the whatever remaining there is at the moment on the auction, on the applicant's fee. But it's a fair point.
I think the issue
the
is
if the ALAC wishes me to raise this question, I can certainly raise it.
Yeah, Olivier, I think the issue is, and Sebastian, that the auction money has been explicitly segregated pending a decision, and therefore it's in a different category than the funds that went into the new GTLD process itself. My recollection is the fiscal year 16 budget and operating plan and budget does go into some depth as to what the status is of the funds that were collected, and I think how much is left. But I think it's a different subject altogether. I really would like not to delve into that in any great detail. If it's something we need to discuss, then I would remand it to the mailing list and perhaps a future meeting. Olivia, I just have one other comment, though. The comment about the GAC, accepting the results of the joint GAC-GNSO working group, I did listen to that, to much of that call, and I heard a reaction, a negative reaction, of the kind I haven't heard from in the GNSO for a while, and I was very glad when I think it was the chair, but it may have been someone else, who pointed out that these were the results of a group that they had chartered, and we were trying to encourage more GAC interaction, and we really should not be too afraid to try new things. So I was glad it was passed and glad that comment was made. But I'll point out to anyone else who's moderately intrigued by the GNSO and wants to learn a little bit more about it, there, although only GNSO members can participate in the Adobe Connect room and that the direct call-in line, there is a live audio feed for GNSO meetings. And anyone can call into it. It's published on the agenda for every GNSO meeting, and it may give you a perspective of the GNSO that you don't have from before. Olivier, one last comment. We're rather late at this point.
Thank you, Alan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. I was just going to respond quickly to the mixing of the issue of auction funds and the issue of application fees. I think one needs to be very careful with mixing those two or dealing with those two together. The auction funds, as you said, have always been put aside. The application fees, some of the applicants are saying, because these were cost recovery basis, these fees should be returned to the applicant. And so we definitely do not want to mix the two issues together, because one might raise a real battle as to whether these should be returned or not, while the others definitely need to be shared among the community or done something with. That's all. Thanks.
Yeah. And I do recall that the application fee was set at a point when ICANN thought it was ready to release the new GTLDs. The implementation process went on for another 2+ years. Accumulating additional expenses, which in theory have to be repaid at this point, repaid into the reserve fund, but repaid for the last. So I think that's an interesting issue, but I don't think it's one we can delve into in any great depth on this meeting. All right. The next item on the agenda is the EWG on Internet Governance. A quick summary of that. The CWG on Internet Governance, I believe, started with a concept was created just after or just before. Olivier can remind me when I turn the mic over to him. Just after or just before NetMundial. And it was originally an ALAC NCSG effort, which has widened. A charter was created. The chartering bodies have approved it. For reasons that are perhaps lost in history, it never went on to our agenda. So we need to fix that. The issue that brought it up today is that the definition of participants and members that is being used in the CWG and CCWG, IANA and accountability, is different from the one that was used when that charter was created. And it felt that we should normalize them all and use the same procedures for participants. And since no one really has a desire to go back and have votes over again, the decision was made to simply ask the groups if they will, if they do not object to using the current definition of the participant and the process of selecting participants. That is self-selection. And so the original charter and the waiver of the definition is going to be put to the ALAC with an electronic vote shortly, and you'll have a bit of time to look at the documents they are pointed to in the agenda, and I sent an email was sent out yesterday on the same subject. Olivier, who by the way is one of the co-chairs of this group.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Krapanablanc speaking, and thanks for the summary. That's actually very correct. Just a bit of history. As a starter, this group was actually just a joint working group between the NCSG and the ALAC. We started this when meeting face-to-face in Buenos Aires in 2013, at the AGM 2013. Very quickly, others heard about this joint effort, and the aim of the working group was to start preparing ourselves jointly for the Net Mundial meeting that took place in March 2014. Very quickly, other groups wanted to join, and this suddenly became a cross-community working group. But it was a little bit of a messy genesis due to the fact that we had a lot of members and looking at the different members in different GNSO constituencies. So the charter was put together and things were tightened up a little bit. The SSAC, in addition to the CCNSO and the GNSO, have passed the charter. We, for some reason, I think probably related to Atlas II, did not. And I was always under the impression that we had, but we hadn't, not at least in a formal way. The reason for relaxing the membership criteria, at the moment the charter mentions a membership criteria of members and observers, but since that time other cross-community working groups such as the one on accountability and the one on INS stewardship transition have had much looser type of membership criteria, and instead of having observers that can just observe and not say anything, they've got full participants. The difference between members and participants being that if a vote is needed, only the members will vote and participants will not have the ability to vote. But when discussions take place, everybody has the same voice. And that's effectively where we are today. The deliverables we've had so far with the group are a statement that was sent to Net Mundial. And since that time, we have also held weekly conference calls. And I guess I can also use this to invite all those of you who are interested in internet governance to join that working group, since we should have this wider membership now. The topics which we're going to discuss, and which we have discussed actually today and will discuss in the next few months, are all related to WSIS plus 10, the World Summit of Information Summit, plus 10, and other issues related to the ITU and the CSTD, the whole other world of internet governance outside of ICANN. So that's the point in the moment, and I hope that the ALAC will be able to support this. As Alan said, I'm one of the co-chairs. I think I can't even be a chair if we haven't ratified it, but co-moderators, I guess. The other two are Rafik Damak for the GNSO and Jordan Carter for the CCNSO. And although Patrick Feldstrom for the SSAC has the ability to be one of the co-chairs, he has way too many other things to do than to actually activate this. So they have just ratified it without having an actual official chair for this. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. And the next item on our agenda is some little minor thing about the IANA stewardship transition and accountability. Could we have the first presentation up on accountability? Heidi's asking, should there be an AI for the start of the ratification? You can if you wish. All right. As everyone, I presume, knows, there were There were meetings in Istanbul last week, 2 days on accountability and 2 days on the IANA transition. Both of the meetings were, I would say, certainly from my perspective, eminently successful, although the work is certainly far from done. I think the place we got to exceeded most people's expectations of what was going to come out, you know, where we would be at the end of the meetings, at the end of those meetings. The accountability measures, the accountability CCWG has close to finalized the first draft of what measures are we looking at in Workstream 1. Now, I'll remind you, Workstream 1 are the things that we believe must be either done or committed to by ICANN prior to any transition of IANA. I'll review them very quickly, and then we'll turn it over to any of the other people at the meeting to make comments, or perhaps anyone has any questions. I hope there will be some. There's a lot of documentation associated with this, and we're not trying to go over it in all detail, but there are really five major components, one of them very significant, that that are part of this proposal. And this will be going out to for public comment, I think somewhere around the middle of April, if I remember correctly. The first part is a revision of ICANN mission, commitments, and core values. That's the leading-in sections of the bylaws. And essentially, this is partly a cleanup, partly putting in things that people, some people have believed should always have been there, and other things that effectively give the community more power by making them core, you know, the core values than they have right now. So again, this requires a fair amount of detail, but we'll be looking at it. You know, we'll be making sure the ALAC has this well in advance of the report being published, so that we can make sure that everyone has a chance to look at this and add their comments if necessary. The second part is the concept of golden bylaws. They're also called entrenched bylaws. These are bylaws that cannot easily be changed. The current rules are that I believe a supermajority of the board can at will change any bylaws. Now, the practice is that they go out for public comment first, and the board acts on those comments and makes decisions. And you'll note a few months ago, there was a proposed bylaw change that would have changed the threshold in following GAC advice. And there was a lot of negative community comment on it, and the bylaw changes were withdrawn at that point. But there's nothing in the bylaws that requires the board to take that kind of action. They could meet in private and change all the bylaws, and we would have no recourse at this point. So the first part is the concept that there be certain bylaws that there be a much more complex procedure to change. And that procedure would, as you'll see, will imply approval of the majority of the community. The second one is enhanced ability to review decisions and review other actions, not just whether the policy and process has been followed, but actually on the merits of the case. The next major point, number four, is community empowerment. Sorry? Someone trying to say something? Nope. Okay. There are a number of aspects of that. The first is that the community will have essentially an ability to challenge the budget. So if the community has a strong problem with a budget, then that budget cannot go forward. That's a very strong mechanism for sending a message to the board that we don't think the board is doing what we believe they should be doing. The next one is an ability to challenge a bylaw change. The third aspect is for the entrenched bylaws, a process by which the community must approve prior to the bylaw being approved. And the last one is the community's ability to dismiss the entire board. All of the issues regarding challenging or dismissal, it is certainly hoped we will never have to exercise those. But the fact that they could be exercised, we hope, will encourage, we can talk about it like children, encourage better behavior. You know, as an example, currently there is a lot of consultation on the budget, a lot of community consultation on the budget, and the budget iterates and changes based on the results of that consultation. But there's nothing in the rules that say that consultation must be done. The next budget could come out with no consultation whatsoever and be approved by the board. And the ability of the community to challenge the budget, we hope, will make sure that there is not only nominal consultation, but effective consultation that actually is used, is used to allow the community to impact what happens at a budget level. The last part of the changes that we're proposing is that currently the affirmation of commitments, the document which is sort of the overriding document governing our relationship with the U.S. government, has a number of reviews in it. It requires us to look at things periodically. The affirmation of commitments is cancelable by either party on essentially very short notice. And it is believed that if we are to empower the community, we must continue these kinds of reviews. And the intent is to put the reviews, something similar to the current reviews, perhaps a little bit more flexibly, into the bylaws so that they are part of what defines ICANN. And can we have the next slide, since we don't have scrolling abilities ourselves? Thank you. The other issues that the Accountability Working Group is looking at are jurisdiction. Now, jurisdiction means different things to different people. To some people, it means the laws under which contracts are governed. That's not really a formal issue. That's a business decision that ICANN takes, and that's not really what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is where is ICANN incorporated and under whose, you know, corporation laws are we subject to. This is a difficult issue because it's quite clear the U.S. would like to see ICANN remain in the U.S., and it's equally clear that other countries would like to see us remain perhaps anywhere but the U.S., and clearly we can't do both at once. So it's going to be a thorny issue, but we are going to be looking at it. The next thing is when I've been talking in the previous discussion about what the community could do. Well, who is the community? We've pretty well narrowed it down to saying it is the ACs and SOs. And with some SOs or some ACs having less, perhaps less voting power than others, particularly RSAC and SSAC. And there's an agreement at this point that the GAC and the ALAC will have similar voting power, or same voting power, to the GNSO and CCNSO. Exactly how we affect that empowerment is not clear, and there's a lot of work to be done, and the CCWG has just contracted with two firms of attorneys, one acting as the primary firm and the second one, in fact, the same one that the CWG is using, acting as a secondary for second opinions. And so that's going to be going ahead. And the last slide, please. Can we scroll to the last slide, please? Thank you. As I mentioned, there will be a public comment coming where these processes I've just talked about will be discussed in great detail. We are awaiting legal advice. There is a lot of work going on, partially led by Cheryl, on stress tests. Stress tests are essentially scenarios of something going wrong and looking at whether the accountability measures we've put in place are sufficient to fix them. And lastly, we'll be looking at Workstream 2, which is once we've done Workstream 1 associated with the transition, what other accountability measures do we need to make ICANN really robust? And that's about it. And I'd like to hope there's some questions of clarification or comments from the other participants in the CCWG to mention what I left out. I really don't want this all to be the Alan Show. And we have Cheryl.
Thanks, Alan. Cheryl Langdon for the Transcript Record. Just briefly, I just wanted to take a tiny step beyond your presentation, which certainly covered the high points and holidays, but raise the matter that in the CCWG meeting that we held however many hours ago it was now, a bit of a blur for me, that we received legal advice review documents from both of the law firms that have been gathered to give us our legal advice for CCWG. And whilst it is early days for both those firms, in particular, the homework done by one of those firms, and in fact, it's the firm that is primarily the firm for the California law-based stuff, gave me enormous pause and concern, and anyone looking at the transcript from the chat will have me typing things like, "This is me keeping calm," and for those of you who know me know that's a very meaningful statement. So I think we need to make sure that as an ALAC, you who are not directly involved here in those meetings, keep an eye on the proceedings and particularly take note that the very important matters of legal advice, that the legal advice calls are going to be open for anyone to join. And I believe the next, I'm just trying to look for the time of it, the next call is later today, or sorry, the first call is later today, and it might behoove some of us to make sure that we're on those calls, just to keep an eye on things, because I was not amused at some parts of the naivety of the advice being given. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. I unfortunately had to miss that call. Could you, in a minute or two, outline what kind of concerns you had? And I will be reading the documents and listening to the MP3, but
yep.
I haven't yet.
It's not a problem, Alan. Cheryl, for the transcript record, my description of the beginning of answering the 12 questions from the firm, which I admit was not able to join us in Istanbul, and that may be part of the problem, indicated to me very little, if any, attention to detail has been paid to the history of ICANN or how we were currently structured or how we've been structured in pre-2000. And their suggestions, albeit hypothetically fascinating, of things like membership was not exclusive of things like universal suffrage. It even at one point mentioned a super board of some 200 people or more and a smaller board. I mean, it was a train wreck.
All right, so it's
not... Is that covered for you?
It's not their advice as such, but their lack of understanding.
At this stage. But you know what happens when legal advice uses words that other people grab onto?
Yes, I do indeed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything, Sebastian?
Thank you very much, Sebastian, for the transcript. Agree with you, Cheryl and Alan, and great summary of the work of the CCWG. I am concerned also that the words put by the legal firm can be taken by other and used in the, what I will say, wrong direction for my and I hope our point of view, then it's something we need to follow. Fortunately, Leon is leading this effort, and even if he's not with us today, I am sure that he can. We can rely on him, partly because he has also to share the working group, or this part of the working group, and could be useful. I think maybe when you talk about the legal advice, it's not just legal advice outside of what we have done. We have had questions, and all the topics you raise, A, B, C, D, E, will need to be confronted with the legal advice to see what we can do, how we can do it in the current legal framework. I think it's a very important topic, and once again, if we can find some time to have an in the working group specific an in-depth discussion on all that would be very, very useful. But thank you for the presentation, Alan.
Thank you, Sebastian. Yeah, both of you raised one of the issues that is a constant thing. Transparency, openness is really good, and it's something we want to work to. But there are on occasion negative aspects of airing all of your details in public, where anyone can extract words and use them however they want. It's such is the world. Eduardo.
Thank you, Alan. This is Eduardo. I just want to give the group my impressions on the meeting that we had in Istanbul. And I think having legal advice in the meeting for the 2 days helped the group to reduce. I mean, we started this first day with 7 proposals, and we ended basically.
Eduardo, can I interrupt? We're not on the CWG yet.
I'm sorry. You're on the CCWG. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. I will say it when we go to the CWG.
Okay. Anything else on the CCWG accountability before we go on to the CWG? Which at some level was perhaps a more interesting meeting. Sebastian, is that a new hand?
Yeah, yes, it's just, Alan, to ask you when you want me. I have a housekeeping issue about the next meetings, and I want, maybe it's better at the end of the discussion about the CWG and not now. But just keep that in mind, that I would like to talk.
Yeah, let's do it right now. Olivier, is that on the CWG or CCWG?
CWG.
Okay, then
CCWG.
Hold on to it.
CCWG.
Sorry, one or two Cs?
The double C.
Double C, then. Olivia, you go first, and then we'll go on to Sebastian's issue.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Clapanovel speaking. And you just mentioned here that perhaps the CWG was more interesting than the CCWG, and I would actually differ a bit on this. I followed the discussions remotely, not all of them, but some of the discussions remotely. The progress made by the CCWG was quite astounding, and I know that there were concerns that, of course, Workstream 1 was going to take so much time that it wasn't going to be ready in time for the CWG to make use of. And in fact, I think that time has been made up, and there's been some real catching up done. So I'm feeling a lot more confident now that the work of Workstream 1 will be ready in time and will have made enough progress for the CWG on IANA to be able to make use of it in its own timeline. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. And I didn't say they didn't make progress. I said more interesting. But perhaps we have different views on interesting. But nevertheless, Sebastian, can you please go ahead?
Yes, thank you. First, before I go to my point, I want to give you what I write in the chat, that public comment will start, or is supposed to start, the 21st of April for 30 days for the CCWG report on accountability. And then we will have to see what we do after these 30 days of discussion. But currently, the plan is to have a face-to-face meeting just prior the meeting in Buenos Aires, the Friday 19 June. And as you know, I can staff decide not to sponsor the participant of those working group for the ICANN meeting. The fact that there is a full day meeting before may change their view, I don't know, but I would like to request that you look with bienveillance, as we said in French, the fact that you can take care of me to come to Buenos Aires for this important meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sebastian. Noted. As you well know, we have made a number of attempts prior to this to get the powers that be in ICANN to change their interpretation of the travel policy for the CWG and CCWG, as some of us are painfully aware. But we'll try again. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I am sure you will try again, and I hope you will succeed this time,
one way or another.
Thank you very much.
We are running very late at this point, and the CWG, as I pointed out, is going to be an interesting thing to discuss. Could we have the slides up for the CWG, please? First of all, the design team one. While it's coming up, the decision was made in Singapore, or after Singapore, that we would put a lot of focus not into the overall model of the design of the transition, internal, external, but start working away at some of the individual issues that are common to any type of implementation. And the concept of design teams was created. You will see on this slide, and if we could scroll it, you could see to the next page, there are a whole bunch of design teams. They were... I thought there was a lot more on the second page. I was wrong. They were assigned a priority, essentially, which ones need to be done now and which ones could wait a little while. That is the priority one or two. The progress on the ones that are important in the short term are pretty well all going well at this point. Some of them are just starting, but they nevertheless have a delivery date of April 10th, which is not very far away. And although some people question this concept of design teams ignoring the overriding consideration of which model to use and focusing on the details, I think it has ended up being very successful. I'm not going to talk about them a lot. You can get some idea of what they are if you can interpret the acronyms. Design Team A was service level expectation. That is, what do we expect IANA and how do we decide what we expect IANA to deliver to the registries and their other customers? Should there be an external appeal process for CCTLD delegations, redelegations? How do we put together a customer service committee? I think, I'm not quite sure what the S is. That is the group that will, on a month-by-month basis, monitor what IANA is doing. Design Team D is authorization. Currently, the NTIA is in the loop. Any changes that are made in the route go through the NTIA. With the NTIA no longer there, what do we need to do instead, if anything, and so forth. So there's a lot of work going on there. And if anyone is involved in the CWG and has not volunteered for one of these working groups, you should perhaps think about it. No more on that. Could we have up the other slides on the CWG, please? Okay. So, as Cheryl mentioned, the legal advice from the team, primary team, engaged by the CCWG accountability has just barely started. The legal team engaged by the CWG had a few weeks lead on them. And I will say, if you look at the credentials of the people on the team, exceedingly impressive, particularly with regard to experience with the U.S. Department of Commerce, with the U.S. Congress, certainly with California law and overall corporate governance. I think we have a pretty impressive team. And the initial answers they provided were very useful, as you'll see in a moment. They seem to have, perhaps unlike what Cheryl has described with the other team, have understood what ICANN is about and have a pretty good grasp of what the alternatives are. And their attitude is very much what I appreciate in legal counsel. They've essentially told us to tell them what we want to end, what we want to achieve, and they will do our best to tell us it's impossible or it's possible and here are the ways you can go about doing it, and to identify the pros and cons of the various aspects. For anyone who's dealt with legal counsel, you really want people, you don't want your legal counsel to tell you what to do. You want them to make sure to give you options and explain the implications and the results of taking various paths. And I think this team so far, in the very little interaction we've had with them, has demonstrated that that they will do a good job for this. Now, many of the answers they gave us, because some of the questions are common between the CWG and CCWG, are common answers, and it would be interesting to look at the similar answers from the two groups on the same questions. Next slide, please. All right. We started off going into the meeting with what was generally viewed as seven different possible ways that we could do the transition. One is the original one that was proposed by the CWG in December, and that is Contract Co. There was another version that was similar to Contract Co., but using a trust instead of an actual company. A trust is a mechanism by which some property can be held on behalf of someone else, and some entity or group or person makes the decisions on what to do with the property. There were the internal solutions, essentially the one that we proposed, saying we don't need a lot of complex structure. All we need is accountability to make sure that the board and the corporate officers do what the community wants with regard to IANA. There was another version that was similar to that, but again, where the IANA was held in trust, but the trustee was ICANN. There were a number of models that were proposed by Avery and a number of other people in NCSG, and these essentially were sort of internal models. One of them was an internal model, IANA was a subsidiary of ICANN. In another one, it was essentially a subsidiary of ICANN, the IETF, and the RIRs. And there's a third one where it was a standalone entity, with somehow ICANN instructing it what to do, or at least the multi-stakeholder community. If we can go to the next slide. As a result of both discussion within the group and the legal advice, three of the options were taken off the board pretty well completely. The trust solutions were taken off for an interesting reason. Although the lawyers agreed that a trust could pretty well do what we wanted, it turns out that trusts are not recognized legal entities in some jurisdictions. And therefore, if suit was brought within those jurisdictions, we might be in a very awkward position. And so those were essentially removed from the roster of possible solutions. The standalone IANA entity, I'm having trouble recalling it. Maybe someone else will correct me. But my belief is it was taken off because really there was not a lot of interest in having a completely standalone entity that somehow was controlled with ICANN but separate. Eduardo.
I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I believe the standalone IANA entity was taken out because we were imposing the other, you know, like the IATF and the RRIs to have a saying in that standalone. I mean, it was like MOUs with ICANN and the rest, and I believe that conversation went there.
Okay, so that was the one that required them to do something and to take part, and we believe there was not a lot of interest in the short term on that. Thank you, Eduardo. We then went into some further discussion, and if we can go to the next slide. Next slide, please. Okay, thank you. You'll see Contract Co. is now has a different color. Essentially, there was agreement. By this time, a large part of the CCWG, of the CWG rather, were homing in on internal solutions of one form or another. There was not a lot of support for Contract Co., but it wasn't zero either. And by somewhere into the second day of the meetings, there was general consensus that we should not put a lot of effort into Contract Co. at this point. It was already a relatively well-fleshed-out model, and this wasn't where we should be putting our investigative processes right now, and it was technically not shelved but put on the back burner. That is, we're not actively working on it right now. That, for all intents and purposes, took the external solutions off the list. So we ended up with an internal solution, that is the one with pure accountability, and you'll notice the hybrid integrated model title is gone because we realized, among other things, in Singapore there was a lot of criticism that we had too many models and we weren't coming to closure. So we changed the words essentially to say we are looking at an internal solution but with a number of variations. That is just pure accountability or a subsidiary type thing that is essentially a corporate stature to IANA but within ICANN and perhaps partly owned by or supported by the IETF and the RIRs. Now, the term subsidiary was no longer being used because it turns out that a nonprofit company cannot have a nonprofit subsidiary. Nonprofits are not owned, so the nonprofit, ICANN cannot own a nonprofit subsidiary. But the term affiliate is used in that it's a separate nonprofit but with a linkage between the two. It turns out that the affiliate status may also have another benefit, that is, it might protect IANA in a bankruptcy of ICANN. It's not clear. The lawyers need to do some homework on that. If we can go to the next slide. And so what we end up with is an internal solution and various options that the lawyers will do some homework on. And at this point, we are now waiting for them to do some homework. There was 2 days of meetings originally scheduled for later this week, and they have been canceled at this point pending legal advice that will come in hopefully relatively soon. I don't remember if there is one more slide. Is there or is there not? Anybody? I guess there isn't one more slide. We'll pretend there isn't anyway. Eduardo, we will turn it over to you and anyone else who has questions or further comments on the meetings. I will point out that I don't believe anyone was really expecting such a clean output to come out of this meeting. There was a strong belief that we would see still significant differences between the parties, and we did not know how we're going to resolve those. And at this point, at least for the interim, we seem to have resolved those issues. Yes, Eduardo, please go ahead, and then we have a speaker list.
Thank you, Alan. I just wanted to give you an impression of the meeting. I went to that meeting very optimistic that we were going to come up with a result, internal or external or whatever. In this case, it was internal solutions. Because, you know, we needed to come up with that meeting with something concrete that will give us a direction. Otherwise, we will never have a proposal out there for public comment before the end of April. So I think everybody was tuning in getting this, review somehow and getting some specific direction. And I was saying before that having the legal advice there helped us answer many, many questions that were speculations before. So, you know, overall, I was very optimistic that we will have some kind of result like that. So it was very useful 2 days meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Eduardo. All of us were hopeful we would have something good, but not all of us really saw a path on how that was going to happen. So good output. Olivier.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Krapanoblov speaking, and indeed I can agree totally with what Eduardo has mentioned. There have been some criticism of the working group in the early days that it had a number of holes in its proposal, things that were missing, parts that were missing. And I think it's very good that we use the face-to-face meeting on the one hand to focus on one proposed structure at the end of the day, whilst at the same time also have those design teams continue their work in parallel so as to fill in the little gaps in the proposal. As a result, I really believe that the proposal from the naming community is likely to be a lot fuller than the proposals from the RIRs, the regional internet registries, that's the numbers, and the IETF, that's the protocols. And so the concern that I had admitted during the meeting was that the numbers and the protocols might have a proposal that would be 10, 15 pages in length, and the naming one that would have 100 pages or more in length. Perhaps it's mindful of mentioning that there will actually be more than one report coming out of this working group. There will be short summaries of the main points being developed. There will, of course, be a full input report that will be sent to the IANA coordination group, but there will also be some additional, I would call it marketing material, to make it more understandable to people that are not really directly related with the named community. As we know, ICANN can be a very complex environment, and those issues can become very complex. So without going into details as to how many reports will be coming out of this group, there are several of them, and I'm particularly pleased that Sidley Austin, the legal firm that has been retained to help the group, is actually also going to be helping with some of the drafting and some of the maybe more contentious or more difficult to discern issues so as to make them understandable, bearing in mind that our audience at the end of the day is not going to be the IANA coordination group, but is going to be the National Telecommunication Infrastructure Administration that then has to turn over to the U.S. Congress and also explain what's going on. And there are, of course, likely to be several people that will read those proposals and try to influence things one way or other. And we're now looking at political influence rather than actually having people going for the correct answer to the
to the task that is at hand. So I'm very glad to see that this support, in order to be able to gain the political support, is also going to be at hand and accompanying us in our task. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian. And yes, as I think I
mentioned... That was Olivier.
Thank you, Olivier. Sorry. As I think I mentioned earlier, several people on the Sidley team are, in fact, have experience in a variety of ways with the U.S. Department of Commerce and with Congress, and those, I think, will be very helpful in doing some of the drafting to try to get us through the maze we have to go through. I think Sebastian was next, but his hand is down. Do you still want to speak?
Alan, you answered to me on the... Thank you, it's Sebastian speaking, but you answered to me in the chat. But I wanted just to raise one point. It's what it's important. It's that we can try in both groups, even if we are talking about the Congress, it's to have them involved in one way or another as actors, as stakeholders in the discussion of what we are doing. And I hope doing so we will decrease the loop at the end. Not sure, but it must be tried. Thank you.
Yeah, and we certainly have a number of people involved in this process who are moderately skilled at aspects. We you know, within the CCWG world, we have several Washington lobbyists and, you know, who will no doubt provide their insight into how we can try to work our way through this process, although we're not the ones directly interacting with them because we have the ICG in between us. Yes, Cheryl.
Thanks, Alan. I think I'm off mute.
You are.
I guess I am, otherwise you'd have said you couldn't hear me by now. Cheryl Langdonor for the Transcript Record, and the reason I was confused whether I was off mute is I'm actually in two Adobe Connect rooms and having two telephone conversations simultaneously while I'm trying to talk to you. So forgive me if I stumble just a tiny bit. I haven't had too much coffee yet this morning. I just wanted to get you to scroll back, if you could, to the slide on the DTs, please.
Yeah. Gisela, that's not scrolling back. That's the previous document.
I didn't know how many documents there were. Anyway, while the magic of bringing up that list happens in front of you, and as someone who was an integral part of getting this whole concept of these small, agile design teams getting going, I really was concerned that people understand what they're all on about. These are, with very few exceptions, extraordinarily short-lived and intensively working things. We need to have community input. It's a lot easier, along with all sorts of work groups that you've been involved with, to get people whose everyday work and vested interests are involved in the topics that these are looking for. But you know, in my plea to have you look at what each of these are interested in, competition.int, escalation processes, or whatever, if something fascinates you and you believe you'd like to contribute your opinion, get in soon, get working soon, but realize that the whole thing may only last a week or two. Right? Without exception, I believe, Alan, correct me if I'm wrong, all of these will need to be finished by the 10th or 16th of April. So we are talking every one of these things has to be populated and run, those that are priority one, obviously not the ones that are priority two and are not going to be started, by, yes, it says here, 10th of April. And so they're going to be extraordinarily busy but very, very short-term things, and then they end. That should free people up for the priority two ones. And if you can't find time to be engaged in the priority one ones, then please do look seriously at the priority two ones. And some of those, such as competition and conflict of interest, I think will have a great deal of interest to the ALAC and the at-large community. So I just want to be really clear of what they're meant to be and what they're meant to are. This is not like joining any other work group that you've ever been involved with. I started Group D and within 11 days, it was 10 days, and that included travel time, it was finished. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Any other final comments or questions on this issue before we close it? People, a few seconds to get their late hands up. Seeing nothing. Then we will go on to the next item. No visual for this one. The next item is number 10, talking about the 2015 ALAC RALO elections, selections, and appointments. There is a document, a web page that's linked to in the agenda item, which it looks like we're getting up, even though I said we don't need it. The timetable you see there, what is up there, is a slightly obsolete version, because the current one has a bright red banner just above the date saying they're preliminary. This is a work in progress right now, and there are a number of things to be refined before we finish the process. Someone is trying to make us dizzy. The only hard deadline we have that's soon is we must select the ALAC members from AFRALO, APRALO, and LACRALO prior to the Buenos Aires meeting. We must tell the NOMCOM who we are appointing so that in their appointments from these same regions, they can ensure some level of diversity should they choose. The other positions all need to be named well in advance of the Dublin meeting, of the annual general meeting. Our intent, however, is to the extent possible to try to do everything in sync. At least one RALO so far has asked that we unsynchronize their ALAC appointments from their RALO appointments. For internal reasons, they would like to delay one and not the other. So we will be making these decisions within the next couple of days, and very early in April, we will be deciding on the exact schedule and starting calls for nominations in the various regions. NARALO has a 30-day requirement, which is longer than the other regions, so we'll be doing a call for nominations earlier in NARALO, but essentially the whole process will be kicked off within the next week or so. Are there any questions on this? As I said, the document that you're looking at on the screen is linked to in the title of agenda number item 10. You can look at it yourself and see if we made any mistakes. We probably did, but hopefully not too many. Any comments, questions? Seeing none, we will go on to the next item, item 11. Now, as you're aware, the ALAC in Los Angeles, I believe, made a recommendation to the board that all TLDs that are classed as Category 1, that is sensitive strings, highly regulated strings that are that were identified by the GAC, should be all processes should be frozen. That is, no contract signed, no new delegations. The new GTLD committee did not reject the advice, but chose not to act on it. And there have been a number of other interactions with the business constituency and other parts of ICANN. And as a result, a short meeting was called, I believe, in December with a few representatives of the ALEC and a few representatives of the new GTLD process committee. That was a short teleconference. It was followed up in Singapore by a very late night meeting, which included some of those people, additional board members, registry representatives, and registrar representatives, and GAC representatives to discuss how to go forward. As one would expect, the registries did not see any problem and wanted to continue going forward. The ALAC and the GAC had strong reservations with some of these TLDs. There are certainly some of the TLDs that are sensitive, but are not necessarily is not necessarily a problem, because the registries have put in place strong controls. And one of the decisions coming out of that is the new GTLD, the GTLD division would put together a list of exactly what the TLDs were that were in question, who was applying for them, and identifying the current status, and identifying what specific public interest commitments were made by the registry. And we, the ALAC people who are in this group, and as well as business constituencies and others, were asked to review this list and say whether we thought there was a problem or not. And we are trying to, with a deadline later today, to finish this list. The what you're going to see in a moment, or what you're seeing now if you scroll properly, is a subset of these TLDs that Olivier, Evan, and I have evaluated to try to understand whether there's a problem or not. And I have now been trying to consolidate our three views. So if you scroll this rather set the size of this so you can see all the columns, and you'll get a flavor for what kind of things we're talking about. We've color-coded them, the results, green, orange, and red. Now, if you look at the first one, for instance, it is the name for lawyer. It's a TLD aimed at identifying lawyers, which has a high possibility for abuse, because we don't want people claiming they're lawyers and giving their advice if they are not indeed lawyers. However, the company, the registry, has said they will restrict registration to people who can produce credentials that says they are a lawyer in that jurisdiction. So we've rated that green. That is, yes, it's high. There's high concern, but there are reasonable restrictions made on it. The next one, as an example, is attorney, which is the English word for the same thing. The registry has not made that kind of commitment. They basically said it's open registration. Anyone can register. They will periodically monitor who is. And if there's some sort of abuse, they will take action. But the details are not specified. And we said we believe there's high concern. There are some controls, but we don't really know the details of what the other actions are. If the registry is willing to put more controls in place or be more specific about what they're doing, maybe this one could become acceptable. If you scroll down to the line item, 5 is an interesting one. That's bet. Now, it's a generic word. It's not clear who you would go to if you wanted approval. You know, who is it that approves using the term bet? It could be used if you want to place bets. It also could be used for education on how to place bets. And it's not clear there's any authority who regulates the term. So although we have some concern, it's not clear how you can fix it. Bingo is a good one. It's a generic word. That's the next one, number 6. It's a generic word. It's open. Bingo is a game of chance. It's pretty low stakes. And in some jurisdictions it's regulated, others it's not. So we figured, okay, there's not a lot of harm done. The next one is casino. That's a term which is regulated in most every jurisdiction. There are rules about how you can run casinos, typically rules about what percentage the casino is allowed to make in terms of profits, and having that as a completely open domain with no real restrictions, we felt was quite problematic and made that one a red. Now, you can scroll down through other ones. You know, if you look at, for instance, number 9, the second one under number 9. Number 9 is CPA. That stands for Certified Public Accountant. It's a term used in some areas, in some countries, to regulate people who claim they're accountants, typically highly regulated. We have an example, for instance, in the first one is an application by Donut saying we want it to be completely open, anyone can register. If anyone reports a problem, we'll do something. We rated that an orange. The next one is applied for by the certification group in the U.S. and saying they are only going to allow U.S. Applications. It's a community TLD, which means it's essentially managed by the group of accountants, and we said that one is okay. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look at CPA, there's various different colors. That's going to be settled at this point by auction. We can't say give it to someone green. That's not in the rules. So it's going to be won by somebody who was willing to put the most money into it. It's not at all obvious which one it's going to be. It could be a green one. It could be an orange one. And if you look at later ones, you'll see that in some of the auctions, they range from green to red. The next one, number 10, it's the last one I'm going to talk about, it's credit card. Well, the largest amount of phishing is related to credit cards. Certainly, the three of us who looked at it cannot countenance something that has a TLD of credit cards. Olivier has done some research on our behalf and demonstrating that on phishing, although not everyone uses a domain name which applies to what we're looking at, it adds credibility. It is included in a significant number of phishing attempts, and therefore something called credit card, the largest phishing opportunity around on the Internet, needs, in our view, some more regulation. I'm going to stop talking now. I think that gives you a flavor for the kind of things we're doing. The list you see on the screen right now or you can download is not the complete list. There's still some more work to be done before the night is over. But if anyone has any questions about this process, or have I said anything which you think is really stupid and we're going in the wrong direction, I would really like to hear. Or see. Is anyone still out there? Have I put everyone to sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have a live voice. Well, if anyone has any thoughts you'd like to pass on to me in the next hour or two, please do so. Olivier, you have your hand up. What have I missed?
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Capanablanc speaking, and I just was waiting for others to comment, but it seems that everybody is digesting some of this. I can just confirm that I am close to finishing a report on the actual amount of abuse that takes place. It's a working paper on the misuse of new GTLDs. It looks at two main sources of data, one being data from the anti-phishing working group, and one piece of data or set of reports from a company called Arketelos. They both do regular reports about the amount of phishing that takes place. Arketelos publishes the State of Abuse report, and Anti-Phishing Working Group has got reports there. I think that I will be sharing this paper with the ALAC once it's sent over to the process by which we're going to be discussing this. The reason for this paper was because when we had the meeting with the different people and the NGPC, we were told, oh, but there is no abuse in all of the new GTLDs. There's no such thing going on, and you guys are just making things up. I'm paraphrasing here, but that was the sort of intent. And what we were told was, we've not seen any abuse so far. And that's not quite the real, the reality of things, where abuse in new GTLDs is following the same pattern of growth as in the legacy top-level domains. And that is based on research that has been corroborated and peer-reviewed. I'm going maybe one step further into also looking at another report that makes an estimation as to the total cost of the abuse, and there are figures of $5.9 billion as the estimated yearly cost of all phishing. That might be inflated. These are figures which are just being thrown out there by various groups, including consumer groups, but what is sure is that this is inflicting damage with regards to end users, and so it's a really important thing that we need to tackle. Secondly, I've also looked at spam, the amount of spam that is being used, and there it's much more simple give-and-take system, where as soon as there is a promotion to sell domains cheaply, spammers start using these domains because it just makes spamming very cheap from other domains. So there's always a spike using that top-level domain when there are cheap domains to be purchased. And so we might see some spikes in spam making use of some new top-level domains that are being sold at promotional prices. So in conclusion, we've got those sources that we'll be sharing with the group, and hopefully that will show that effectively we are not just making up the fact that new GTLDs have a potential to promote phishing and spam. It's a reality, and Cat1 TLDs, the one that we have a list of on our screen at the moment, are particularly vulnerable to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. There's a lot of interesting work going on. I know my former employer, McGill University, we are as prone to phishing as anyone is, and it is startling at the number of highly educated, computer-literate people who click on phishing requests. And it's disturbing, but it's the reality we're living with. And anything that we can do within the scope of ICANN, in my mind, that can minimize it. It's not our problem uniquely, but anything we can do to not facilitate it, I think, is important work. Any other comments? Olivia, is that a new or an old hand?
Thank you, Alan. It's a new hand. And I realize we haven't even what phishing is. Of course, we're not speaking about the great outdoors, going to a river or on a boat and catching fish in the sea. We're speaking about something much more terrible, which is the fact that some fraudsters and organized crime and others try and obtain personal details of yours, perhaps your credit card details or account numbers, by making themselves somehow what they are not. So they send you an email, say that they are your bank, and there have been security breaches at the bank, and you need to send them your password and account details so as for them to fix it. And by the law of averages, because they are able to send maybe millions, tens of millions of emails out in a few seconds, there will be some people that will be caught by this. And in fact, sometimes the fraud is so well done that it's very, very difficult indeed
to notice that the email does not actually come from your bank, does not actually have anything to do with your bank. And I must say, I admit, even, you know, after 30 years on the Internet, or the 20 years, 25 years or so, I've been nearly caught on a number of occasions. So the idea out there is, if you do suspect something strange about an email that you're receiving, just don't act on it. And if it's your bank, then call your bank and find out if they really did send you something. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. I suspect most people on this call are well aware of it, and I also suspect all of us have on occasion clicked on those links. I hope not giving them your passwords and your PIN numbers, however, though. Anything else on this item?
Have.
Pardon me?
There was a spear phishing that took place with ICANN just a month and a half ago. So it's
yes, indeed.
Quite recent.
And if you don't know what spear phishing is, look it up. That's what Google is for. I think we're complete with this item. I don't see any other hands. And the last item is any other business. No one volunteered any. One last call for any other business. And you're standing between us and finishing on time. Olivier?
Yeah, thank you very much, Alan. Olivier Catanablon speaking again. And I was just going to mention that for those people who are interested in INS stewardship transition, both with regards to the naming issues, but also looking at what happens next with the INS coordination group, there is a capacity building program webinar taking place tomorrow. And the time and date for this should, unfortunately, I haven't told staff, but it should appear automatically. It's from 1300 to 1430 UTC. And you can find all details about this program on this wiki page, which I'm putting in the chat. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Last call for any other comments. I thank you all for a good meeting, and we are finishing 1.5 minutes early. Thank you all for a great meeting. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Alan. Great meeting. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Gracias. Bye.
Hello. Thank you, everyone. The meeting has been adjourned, and the audio will now be disconnected. Thank you for joining today's call.